Welcome to Conversations with a Wounded Healer. I'm your host, Sarah Bueno. I'm a psychotherapist, teacher, consultant, and most importantly, a wounded healer, living and working in Chicago, Illinois.
And I'm your host, Anne Remy. I'm a counseling psychotherapist, yoga teacher, and trauma specialist living in Brighton, UK. On this show, we interview folks in a variety of healing professions, and we discuss the intersectional journey of healing self while caring for others.
But we're not just focused on individual healing, but also healing on the collective level, from white supremacy, late-stage capitalism, and the patriarchy. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Anne.
How you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, there's existential dread, there's pain, but you know what? There's also joy. My puppies, goddamn, those cute little sewer boys bring me so much joy.
Whenever I'm feeling really sad, I just look at my dogs existing and I'm like, can't be too upset at the world when I've got these just two cute, precious little babies.
Yeah. It does make life better. Speaking of sewer boys, have you seen Dix the musical?
No.
Okay. I can't recommend this movie, but I also want everyone to watch it, if that makes any sense. It's kind of like camp level Rocky Horror. Sort of camp, and there are two characters called the Sewer Boys, and it's a lot funnier to call my dogs Sewer Boys when you know what they actually are. So you, Anne, I can recommend you should watch that musical. It's on HBO for people in the US. I don't know where you could find it in the UK, but it's something is what I'll say.
Okay. I'll have a gander into Dix the musical.
Yeah. And then report back on the Sewer Boys to me.
Okay.
Please.
Yes, deal. Speaking of dicks, if you like to swing yours around.
Wow.
And you like to swing your dick around monetarily. You can support us at patreon.com.
That's good.
/convos with a wounded healer. You can buy our merch at tinyurl.com/CWH merch. I'm so proud of myself.
I'm dumbfounded. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's the last way to support us is to rate us. And you can go to ratemypodcast.com/woundedhealer. To rate us and choose what platform you're rating us on, which is very helpful. And have we passed the giveaway?
No. This is probably their last chance to hear about the giveaway before it gives away.
It is your last chance to get a giveaway before it got away. If you rate us and send a screenshot.
Rate and review.
Thank you. And send a screenshot of that to Sarah at headheartbiztherapy.com, you are entered in a chance to win one session with me and one session with Sarah to celebrate my me-iversary as being co-host of this podcast for an entire year.
Yes. Please join us. Yeah.
How did you like Neil?
I loved Neil. Neil's voice reminded me of my friend David Clinton, who was on the podcast very, very early in the podcast. And he's got a very similar energy too, of this like feminist man who was very internally reflective and emotionally intelligent. And I really appreciated that. However, I want to fight with you both on the fact that just because something is not measurable doesn't mean it's not true. I understand where he's coming from and who he's fighting and why he needs to be using logic and studies and whatnot. But I just want to say, Neil, I hope you also believe in magic because it is real as well. And there's an important place for magic in this world.
That I was like, where is she going with this? I'm so confused about what she's talking about. So what you're going to hear, what Sarah's talking about, is you're going to hear how Neil uses his platform to call out issues with toxic masculinity in the manosphere, which is a word that I learned through this interview.
Oh, no, you hadn't heard that before.
No, I had not. I don't visit corners of the internet that I don't know. I kind of get in and get out.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't spend a lot of time on the internet. So Neil likes to combat sort of sexist tropes with evidence, meaning like peer-reviewed studies and stuff like that, which for me, who loves information, is incredible. Mm-hmm. But I do agree that magic does exist. Fun fact for all of our listeners, my 25th birthday party had two magicians at it.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing.
Which is maybe different from the kind of magic that you're talking about, yes. But still magic.
I mean, the thing, because you two were both like geeking out on how important evidence is, and I just never want to lose that there is also more than evidence.
Sure.
I'm an evidence and person, mm-hmm. not a, I don't believe in evidence, I only believe in magic. I'm an evidence and. And yeah. I mean, we're in such a weird time right now, I think, where it's already hard to trust what we read, what we see, and what we hear. And AI is only going to make it worse. So honestly, I mean, I don't know if evidence is going to be this thing that we also begin to not trust at some point because of how AI can create false evidence. I don't know. So that's just why I'm saying yes and. But thank God for people like Neil who are using their male privilege to talk to people who definitely would not listen to those of us with vulvas. They're only going to listen to people with their own genitals. And I can't believe I started talking about our genitals here. So I think I should give it back to you.
Speaking of dicks. You didn't know what you were doing when you brought that musical up. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I think one of the things that I really like about the way that Neil presents evidence is it's not always like scientific evidence. It's peer-reviewed stuff, right? So it could be, you know, there are peer-reviewed studies on intuition. There is no like scientific evidence of intuition, but there's a lot of studies on how therapists use their intuition, how intuition does this and da-da-da, whatever. So I think what he's trying to do is to give another perspective, especially to a group, you know, the people that he's specifically aiming towards are probably not listening to any kind of magic or evidence.
I wonder how much it makes a difference to the people that need to be hearing it, or if it's really what ends up happening with the information is, like you said, someone shared his stuff with you and you're like, oh, I felt like so validated
as hell,
right?
Yeah.
This is just a big question that I have about if we're going to make change in this divisive world that we're in, how does change actually happen? And again, keep doing what you're doing, Neil, because it's fucking great and I love it. I just started following you, very much love the content. I guess I just think about how do we support conversation and critical thinking between different sides. I don't think the algorithm is going to be feeding his stuff to, you know, the folks that need to actually hear it. So not a criticism, but just a curiosity and question of how we actually move through this time.
Well, and that's something I think one of the things we talk about towards the very end is my hope as someone who follows him, my hope was that it wasn't just women following him, but my hunch was that the majority of people following him would be women. And he does touch on the fact that he's gotten messages from men saying that they've really changed their mind and learned a lot from him. And I think, you know, ultimately, one of the things he talks about that I love is somebody has to be a counterbalance to the voices that do exist out there and that are very loud. Mm-hmm. And there's not going to be one right way to do it. And it's not even necessarily arguing with the other side so much as it is reaching out to the people who haven't made their minds up yet, who are still really young and are only hearing those guys.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that's something that Neil and a few others are providing. So
absolutely.
Thanks for using your male privilege, guys. We super appreciate.
Cheers with all of our emotional support beverages.
Cheers with our emotional support beverages.
Ding, ding.
So with that, I shall introduce Neil. By day, Neil is an English professor at a community college currently teaching courses on contemporary literature and human sexuality. By night, he's a content creator who talks mostly about social theory and masculinity, specializing in refuting the misogynist arguments coming out of the manosphere. So please enjoy this conversation with
Neil Shyminsky, or you may know him as Professor Neil.
Hey there, therapist. How you doing? If you're like a lot of people out there, maybe you need a little bit more support than usual. Well, I've got you covered. I'm currently running two groups that I plan to run again in the fall of 2024. So add your name to the waitlist to be notified as soon as info is available. First is the Burnt Out Practice Owner Support Group for group therapy practice owners. We'll focus on the emotional component of business ownership while building trust and connection with other practice owners. We'll explore topics such as boundary setting, feeling underappreciated, overwork, and find ways to reconnect with our agency. And you'll also have the support of other practice owners when challenges arise within your business. Next is the Authentic Leaders Group. It's here to help you become the authentic and wholehearted leader you aspire to be. Join me on an 8-month journey of self-discovery and leadership mastery, where you'll enhance your leadership skills and forge meaningful connections with fellow therapists who are committed to their own growth and the betterment of the therapy field. For the Burnt Out Practice Owner waitlist, go to www.headheartbiztherapy.com/burntout. Make sure you've got the T in B-U-R-N-T-O-U-T. And next is the Authentic Leaders Group waitlist at www.headheartbiztherapy.com/authentic-leaders-group. Hope to see you soon.
Professor Neil Shyminsky, welcome to Conversations with a Wounded Healer.
Thank you for having me.
Very excited to have you here. So I first found you through following you on Instagram, and a few of my friends had said, you got to follow this guy. You're going to feel so validated. So I wonder if you could kind of introduce us to who you are and what you do and what you've kind of become famous for recently.
Sure. Well, who I am is just a community college English professor in a town that is so obscure, frankly, even within Canada, that I usually describe myself as living a little bit north of Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah, if people are familiar with Sudbury, which is the town, it will be because they drove through there once.
Sure.
Didn't stop, but you know, they saw the sign along the highway. Yeah, and I suppose, you know, English professor makes it sound like I spend a lot of time just reading novels, but my grad school research was on masculinity. Which is how I came to the sort of work that I do online now. So on platforms like TikTok and Instagram mostly, where I try to, in the conversation that we were having before we started recording, I think the phrase you used was restore sanity.
Yeah.
So I try to engage with, you know, a lot of folks, in many cases young men, who have very strong opinions about gender and gender roles and appear to have absolutely no factual basis for anything that they're saying. And so my usual shtick is to, you know, okay, well, let's dive into the research. Let's see what the scholarly consensus is here, which, you know, I think it's not really a spoiler alert to say it usually does not align with what they are claiming.
Yeah.
And so that is sort of what has taken off online. And I'm so happy that it seems to speak to so many people.
One of the things that I appreciate as a research and data nerd is that you come with the receipts, right? You've got the research and you can actually talk about why the research is good or bad. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, in a world of like fake news, that in and of itself, regardless of what it is that you're talking about, is incredibly like sanity restoring, just to hear somebody go, here's why I think this is incorrect. Here's all the research that backs it up. Here's why the research is good. And so that in and of itself is so...
You know, it's one of the unintended effects that I've noticed, or that have been, that's been pointed out to me, especially recently, are the number of people who have thanked me, because I get a lot of DMs.
Yeah, I bet.
And this new category of message that I've been receiving is from the sort of person who, you know, the content of the video, great, but when I veer off into talking about research and whether this research is good or incomplete, or, you know, there are gaps in the research, avenues yet to be explored. I have people who thank me for like contributing something to research literacy.
Yeah.
On their end, where it's like, oh, you know, I never would have thought to look at this particular angle. I would have just seen, oh, okay, these are the findings. These are the results. that those must be the facts.
And that's, I think, I take for granted as somebody who learned that in university to question, okay, well, how many people did you actually study? Or how was it just grad school students in California who were looking to make $50 that you studied or, you know, whatever? I take for granted that I was taught how to do that, but not a lot of people were. So I think the way that you're delivering it is also very approachable and understandable and non-condescending, which I think is key for a lot of people, especially on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, going to be totally honest, sometimes I take a condescending tone, you know, depending on who it is that I'm responding to. But there are words that get used on the internet that, you know, bug you, especially when they're in your field and somebody is using language that is simply untrue or inaccurate. You know, so the habit that people have of saying, you know, oh, there is this study that proves. And as soon as somebody throws out the word proves, I'm immediately, if I don't already know the answer, I'm heading to Google. I want to find this study. The odds that somebody used the word prove strikes me as very low.
Non-scientific for sure.
And I think those are the moments where people are like, oh, well, I always thought that that was the point, that the point of science was to prove something. Either I've proven it's true or I've proven it's false. Especially when we're talking about the social sciences, when we're talking sociology, and nobody is using that language.
Yeah.
And okay, so what language are they using? What are they actually claiming to have done? If they're not proving something, there's still a goal there that they're attempting to achieve. What is that goal? And I feel like that's often a side conversation that's occurring, but also a very important one.
So kind of in that vein, what do you think your goal is in presenting everything that you're presenting?
I'll back up. I'll answer this question in a roundabout way.
Okay.
When I started making videos on TikTok in the spring of 2021, I was teaching a course on graphic novels. And I started the account because I was teaching it virtually and I had all of this extra content that I thought was great and I wanted to share it. So I shared it on TikTok. Now, because of the way that I'm trained in my own interests, I did tend to come at these graphic novels from more of a social theory perspective. So it gradually led me to where I am now. But one of the things that I ended up discovering, much to my chagrin, you know, I had no idea when I got on TikTok that the Manosphere and Red Pillars were as big, that they were as numerous as they are.
What's a red pillar? What does that mean?
Oh, it's some men in the Manosphere identify specifically as being red pill. So you know the Matrix meme.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Man, there's so much I don't know about this.
Yeah, yeah. So the red pill referring to, you know, there was like a moment of epiphany for them where they realized just how bad things are.
Right. Okay.
Great question, though. You know, I throw out vocabulary and I got to make sure that we're using the same language.
I heard on an episode, I don't know if you've heard, wait, don't tell me, it's an NPR news quiz show. Neil deGrasse Tyson was on it once and he got a whole bunch of questions wrong. And they were like, oh, you must be so disappointed. And he was like, I love getting things wrong because it means I've learned something new today. So I love hearing terms that I'm always happy to be the person to ask the question that seems obvious.
Amazing. Yeah. No, totally. Yeah. So when I started making these videos where I was responding to men in this Manosphere red pill community, I asked people to share accounts that they're familiar with me. I wanted to put together a list, thinking that I was going to get a few dozen, maybe. And I stopped adding to the list once it moved over 100. And that took a couple of days.
Sure.
Well, this movement is overwhelming. And so then I would be asked, you know, and I frequently get the question, can you recommend other men like yourself, other men who are making videos like you? And I come up with a list of half a dozen names. Like, wow, we are badly outnumbered. And so that's, I feel this pressing need to make videos like these because they require a response. And, you know, there are also dozens of women who are responding to these men and doing a fantastic job also. But there's a need for men to be out there as well, pushing mm-hmm. back, providing, you know, role models for mm-hmm. the same young and adolescent men that are watching, you know, the Andrew Tates of the world. And anytime I feel like, you know, I've made this point before, you know, I've made a video like this one, I've responded to a video like this one, I remind myself that they outnumber us in this space, something mm-hmm. like 20 mm-hmm. to 1. Mm-hmm. Something has to be done about that.
And I think, you know, part of that is what I find so refreshing as a woman, just hearing like, okay, I'm not going to have to be the one to explain it. This man is doing it on our behalf, like, you know, in the same way that it shouldn't be Black people doing the work for white people, queer people doing the work for cis and straight people, you know, shouldn't be the work of women to educate men. So it's, in some ways, for me, it's just seeing some of your videos, I'm like, oh, like, it makes me feel less exhausted and knowing you're out there. And it's so important what you're saying, this idea of kind of balancing out this content, because, you know, young boys, young men aren't getting as many, like, the positive shit doesn't get as many clicks. It's not going to end up in their feeds, right? So in some ways, I think you're contributing to making a safer socials environment, but also a safer, like, wider social environment.
I mean, I certainly hope so. That's the goal, right? One of the questions that I'm frequently asked is, you know, why is it that you think there are so many of them? Why are they so successful? Why are our young men so ready to listen to these voices in the manosphere? And this is one of the questions where I've been asked often enough that I have like a snappy little response, which is they offer easy solutions to problems that they've invented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how frequently do we watch these men complain about something where we're left wondering, like, is that even a real problem that they're describing? You know,
I mean, I ask that question a lot, but it's nice to hear that you do as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh no, they had to convince us that this is a problem in order for the solution to that problem to sound appealing in some way. And of course, it's always something incredibly simplistic and often awful or harmful. But that's how they get the buy-in, by first creating this anxiety and this fear about men being left behind or men being victimized in some way that, again, is not reflective of reality. But they need to make their audiences fearful and angry so that when they now offer that solution, they're far more likely to take them up on that offer. Mm. And that's, I can see how that would be appealing. If you buy that the problem is real, then you're going to be looking for solutions as well. And it is difficult to offer answers that are quite as simple and easy and appealing if you also, you know, want to be responsible and offer research and evidence-based information in return. I'm working on it, but I can't spit it out in quite as easy to digest bits.
Well, I think that's, you know, therein lies the crux of some of our information delivering issues, is that, you know, it's lists, it's bullet points, it's like hot takes that, you know, get read or consumed because we've kind of lost as a society the attention span for anything longer. So, you know, as you're kind of talking about all of these problems that people create, I found myself wondering, do you ever get lured into that as you're looking at some of these videos? Because I'm guessing you spend a lot of time looking at some pretty toxic shit.
Oh, yes.
And I was thinking the other day, I was like, I wonder if how he's like taking care of himself while he's doing this. And also, I wonder if it ever, I watched a documentary about flat earthers the other day, and all of a sudden my video suggestion started giving me all this, like all these other sort of conspiracy theory. And I was like, no, I don't want this, because I know I'm going to start to go, oh, well, maybe they have a point. And, you know, they always find a way to hook you. So I'm, you know, yeah. Question number one, are you taking care of yourself? How are you taking care of yourself while you're doing this? And question number two, do you ever find yourself kind of like being lured in, and how do you manage that?
It's funny that you mention that you're fed these other conspiracy theory videos, because I've noticed that my Instagram feed on my Professor Neil account has become a nightmare. Using the search bar, there was a day a couple of months ago where I went to go search for something, and I was just looking at what was already suggested to me. I'm like, how did Instagram reach this point where they thought that I wanted to see any of this? And it's because people share all of these videos with me, either videos that they specifically want me to respond to, or even just videos that they have questions about. You know, that they're unsure, and they're like, you know, I don't know how to fact check this. Can you look into it? And as a result, Instagram is now convinced that this is what I want. So I try not to spend too much time looking at that page, because it's, you know, it's one thing to have one video in front of me.
Yeah.
It's something else to see a grid of just the same flaming hot garbage.
Yeah.
But as for, you know, how do I take care of myself then? You know, making the videos themselves feels therapeutic at times. You know, just the satisfaction of finding the research that either validates or invalidates an awfully suspect claim, and then, you know, putting the words to it, speaking truth to some of these outrageous lies, that feels good. You know, I'm not going to pretend that this is a totally selfless exercise. It can be really satisfying.
Yeah, I bet.
To create a really great video response to some of these awful, awful people. And otherwise, you know, it's having the ability to disconnect and, you know, retreat into the real world with my family. I have a second daughter on the way. She's going to be here in about 3 months.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And yeah, my family keeps me very grounded.
And what about anything that, have you ever felt like lured into anything where you're like, oh, maybe he's got a point?
I think, strangely, that it's the reverse. I have become much more skeptical of everything that I hear on Instagram or TikTok. I'm much more likely to reflexively start Googling something, especially if I don't already have some sort of knowledge.
Sure. And that's probably a way to take care of yourself as well without kind of actively doing that. You've trained your brain not to take the sort of easy hook.
Yeah. And if anything, you know, the easy hook is itself a red flag. If somebody says, you know, studies show, research shows, I'm immediately trying to find that study or that research. If you're not giving me a screenshot, if you're not sharing a name, I am immediately suspicious. This actually led me to get into an argument with somebody who we have certain ideological sympathies, another man on TikTok, but he is of the opinion that, well, you don't lead with the research. Don't lead with your citation. Nobody wants to hear that. I'm like, oh, but that's what they do. We have to show our work. And maybe I've gotten a little too sensitive to that sort of suspect rhetorical approach where people leave their citations out. But I would much rather be safe than sorry.
Sure. There's something you said the other day, and I forget what the actual video was about. But you said, you were talking about masculinity, and you said something to the effect of, and the beauty of masculinity. And my gut reaction was, the fuck is he talking about the beauty of masculinity? And then I went, no, girl, like, there's beauty in everything. And how dare I take that away from men? Like, that, you know, to say that there's no beauty in masculinity means that, you know, half the species is all bad and ugly and terrible and toxic. And so it changed it, or maybe not changed, just opened kind of, I think, what I have over time become very jaded to, this idea of like, I don't know how much good can come from this at this point, which is like a horrible view to take. And so I was so grateful to you in that moment, because I was like, woo, you just like cracked something open in me that I really needed to like release, I think. So I'm curious what your well, I guess maybe what's it like to hear that before I say anything else?
I mean, I'm thrilled to hear that. Like, full disclosure, I do feel sometimes like I get trapped in a bit of a cynical spiral myself. And so part of that self-care piece is, you know, if I reach a point where I have made 3 or 4 consecutive videos where I am responding to some sort of toxically masculine talking point, I need to find something fun to throw in there. I need to break it up, because there are certainly points where it feels like, you know, are we even worth saving?
You know what? That's in therapy, especially in trauma work, we call that titration. You can't have every session about the worst shit, or else you just get stuck in it. You have to have some sessions that have joy and levity, and you have to, like, you can swim really deep for a little while, but you have to come up for air every once in a while to allow you to go back down. So that makes perfect sense to me.
Thank you for validating what I was feeling here, and I didn't have a word for it.
I can probably send you the citation for that later if you want it.
I would appreciate that. You know what? You've even given me, like, something that I can talk about on my own channels now. So yeah, so we need those reminders. I need those reminders that there are wonderful aspects to masculinity as well. Like I spend so much time sort of engaging with the very worst that men and masculinity have to offer. I can get a little lost in that too. So I think that what you were specifically talking about or referencing there was the video that I made about soft masculinity.
Yeah, maybe that was it.
Yeah, and I was talking about the cancellation of Our Flag Means Death and Ted Lasso ending, how we had these wonderful examples of this, you know, nurturing, kind, empathetic, sort of masculine leadership that is demonstrated in both of those shows that we don't really get a lot of exposure to. But here we have these great models of men who, like, lead with their hearts. And it's profoundly sad that, you know, I'm now trying to rack my brain to think in popular culture, what else is out there where we get similar examples of soft masculine men? I can't think of
any. Do you know what? When Ted Lasso ended, after I stopped crying through that last season, I was like, okay, what else can fill this void? Because it was, like, it's the perfect term for it, the soft masculinity, which, you know, for someone like me, is very reparative. Seeing something like Ted Lasso is, and that's, you know, it's a general term, but also a therapy term, like a reparative experience. When you, you know, experience something that's the opposite of what you experienced, and you kind of allow yourself to internalize it a little bit. And Ted Lasso, for me, was one of those, like, oh, wow. And then I felt sad for us. And then I felt sad for men that example was no longer there, or would not be continuing.
Same. As much as I just, you know, will miss watching the show, to now lack that ongoing example and demonstration. And you know what? I didn't, you know, come into this planning for us to have this Ted Lasso sort of offshoot on the conversation, but here we are. Also, one of the things that I loved about Ted Lasso is it wasn't easy for him. You know, there was a cost and it took work, and you can't just give of yourself selflessly, endlessly.
Yeah.
So there's so many layers, those characters that were just wonderful to have as examples, just floating around in the ether of pop culture.
I described it to a lot of people when I was, like, pitching it to them to watch. I was like, you know how when you rewatch sitcoms from the 90s and you're like, man, if these people would have just communicated with each other, this problem wouldn't exist. And Ted Lasso was what happens if you actually communicate your problems to somebody else. Like, and that was refreshing for me as well, because I'm like, fuck, this would be great if we all did this. I wouldn't have a job, but, like, I'm okay with that. Like, I would love to have to find a new job.
The work would still be there. You know, like, that's Ted great communicating his feelings 95% of the time. Ted still needed that help, which, again, was one of the wonderful things about that show and that character, to demonstrate that, you know, even somebody who's doing the things, he's doing the work, still has that blind spot, those conversations that he can't have, that he needs someone to help him explore.
Do you know what's just around the corner? It's Anne's anniversary being part of Conversations with a Wounded Healer. And we are celebrating the anniversary with a giveaway for anybody who wants to write an Apple Podcast review between March 6th and April 24th of 2024. So go to Apple Podcast, whether it's on your phone or your laptop, search for Conversations with a Wounded Healer, click on the show and scroll down until you see ratings and reviews. Tap write a review and tell us what you think about the show. Then you'll screenshot your review and email it to me at sarah@headheartbiztherapy.com. I know you're thinking, what are the giveaways already? Well, very exciting. You will be entered into a drawing to win 1 hour sessions with both Anne and me. Anne will give you a choice between a private yoga class or a travel consultation session. And with me, you can choose between a 1 hour business coaching session or a Reiki session. Submissions must be received by 11:59 p.m. Central Standard Time on April 24th. The winner will be announced on social media on May 1st, and Anne and myself will reach out to you to schedule your sessions. So please enjoy our anniversary giveaway and celebrate our little Anne Remy.
What's beautiful about masculinity to you?
What's beautiful about masculinity? I'm tempted to just bring it back to this same conversation about, you know, those tender spots in masculinity, you know, because there's the tendency to look at, you know, strength in terms of durability and toughness and endurance, but, you know, the strength in also being vulnerable and open, willing to work through difficult things, those kinds of strength are so easily discounted and mistaken as weakness in so many cases, right? I enjoy discussions around topics like vulnerability for that reason, because they are so readily dismissed by the sorts of men who I'm responding to. So readily dismissed as feminine and therefore bad. So I enjoy those conversations where I try to flip the perspective and show that no, actually this is, not only is vulnerability beautiful, but in fact it is demonstrative of a kind of strength that I think that even some of the men that I'm responding to should be capable of respecting. They should be able to find some value in that too.
What I heard in that is the beauty of challenging your default.
Yes.
And challenging what's expected of you. And there's something about if we kind of reduce it to pure biology, right? You know, being great, you can pick up heavier things than I can, but you don't need to rest on that. Like, there's so much more to you, and there's so many more layers to you that I think for women, societally, we are allowed to explore. But there's something, I think, what I heard you say is there's something really beautiful in the people who, the men who choose to explore that.
Absolutely.
Instead of just kind of defaulting to the biological, societal narrative of this is what it means to be a man.
This actually, you know, the discussion about a default, I was thinking recently about the way that I dress in faculty union meetings, which will make sense, I hope, by the time I get to the end of the story.
I'm with you.
So, like I said before, I work at a community college. It's a very blue-collar town. You know, we were founded on the lumber industry, and the largest employer here is a mining company. And when I became faculty union president, and this was now almost 5 years ago, I recognize this now as expressive of a kind of insecurity. I would wear flannel, much like I am right now, just by coincidence, to every meeting. Because here I am, the feminist-identified English professor, leading these meetings with a lot of people who teach in technology and are skilled laborers. I want to have, I want to dress myself in markers of an authority that they would appreciate, that would appeal to them. So quite literally, I dressed like them.
Mm-hmm.
And then yesterday, and it's funny timing, I had a union meeting where I wore a t-shirt with as plainly a feminist message as I think I could. It was one that said, men of quality don't fear equality. And I passed somebody in the hall, one of these gentlemen that works in a mining technology program, who gave me a funny look. And then he smiled, which was good. But I realized, oh, I don't feel this pressure any longer to signal in a way that will hopefully earn me some sort of superficial authority or points with these coworkers. I am much more comfortably myself, and so comfortable signaling instead, you know, what is important to me, and even, you know, pushing a conversation in that direction. But I first felt like I had to appeal to this default.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, well, it's mostly men and mostly blue collar men that attend these meetings. And so I don't want to rock the boat when I am newly in this position. And now I feel no compunction about
good word.
Starting something if that's the direction that people want to take it in. And it, I suppose implicit in here is, you know, that this is a way to that I can hopefully make my privilege work for me.
Mm-hmm. And that's something I think using your privilege, making your privilege work for you is something that I'm super passionate about, right? I can't change the system, but I can change the way that I access and use my privilege, and I can be conscious of the way that I'm using it, or I can try to be more conscious of it, right? Because yes. we've all got our blind spots, but it's so important. And I hear beauty in that as well for yourself, just kind of shedding that, like, that need to not perform, but...
You know what? I think perform is a fair word to use here. You know, it more than one person caught on to what I was doing. And other people that I work with on a regular basis, who became very attuned to the fact that when I was working in this as faculty union president, I was always dressing in a way that I normally don't. So I think perform is quite fair. And it was expressive of an anxiety that I felt, not only because I am not somebody working in, you know, with heavy equipment and machinery, but because I am also among the very youngest.
You know,
this is a profession where at 42, I have coworkers who call me kid, you know?
I love that, actually. Makes me feel good at age 36. So how do you feel about the term healer as applied to the work you're doing?
You know, I was thinking about this, obviously, because of the name of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one that I have ever thought to apply to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, you know, like, why is that? Because I can certainly see the connection here.
Mm.
And in conversations like this one, I have certainly felt people suggest that I should be able to use it, that I should be comfortable with it. I did some work with a diversity, equity, and inclusion company. And I asked them when we had our initial conversation, I think, you know, very reasonably, I'm like, well, like, why reach out to a straight, white, cisgender man to do this work for you? And they said, you know, fair question. They're like, we know that men have a bias, that they are far more likely to listen to other men. And rather than fight that, we want to try and leverage it.
Mm-hmm.
And what they called me then was a white man whisperer.
I love that.
And I'm like, oh, okay. That's like something to write on the CV.
Absolutely.
And then I'm also working with another company, and they said that what they found appealing about my videos is that I have reassuring big brother energy.
You absolutely do.
And so I'm like, oh, well, you know, these things, in fact, do seem to slot into what I would perceive to be kinds of healers.
Absolutely.
And you know, I don't know, maybe you have some insight to offer here. I can't really explain why it is that I am reluctant to use that word myself. Is it because my training is in, you know, reading books rather than people?
I mean, we could spend hours trying to break that down. And it's, you know, maybe that's another conversation to have. But if it makes you feel any better, I actually feel really uncomfortable using the term myself. And I would say it's a really divisive, we get a lot of different answers to that question.
Interesting.
And a lot of people feel really comfortable with the word as applied to their profession, but not necessarily as applied to themselves. And every time someone goes, yeah, I feel that. I feel like that's an appropriate term for myself. I'm like, man, you're amazing. Cause I don't feel like, that's a separate conversation. But I think there's a lot of, I would take it back to white guilt, white shame, and very sort of like Victorian and religious ideas that have like, what's the word I want here? Seeped into white culture, where, I mean, I live in England now, and you can't get an English person to say one nice thing about themselves. You just can't do it. Whereas I'm I think I'm great, right? Like, I've got great self-esteem, but like still struggle with the idea of like calling myself a healer.
I mean, what you're describing, like, I feel much the same. I have a great sense of self-esteem too, but you throw this word healer out and I'm like, whoa, what, me?
Yeah, there's a lot of like power. There's so much associated with it, right?
Yeah. You know what else? On the one end, it's association with, healers are these powerful, selfless, and good people. Like, just, could I possibly be a good enough person to earn that title? And then there's this other extreme. Who is it that we hear most eagerly and enthusiastically calling themselves healers? It's, you know, people who sell coffee suppositories.
Sure.
Or who claim to be able to heal energies at a distance.
Mm-hmm.
Healer has unfortunately become a word like what we were talking about earlier, the people who refer to studies that prove A, B, and C. If I hear somebody call themselves a healer, it feels like an immediate red flag.
Mm. So what about the term wounded healer, just to add on to it?
The idea of being wounded feels much more comfortable.
Sure.
Yeah, because, you know, who is not wounded in some way? Mm. And, you know, you were just talking about guilt, white guilt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, add to that in my situation, you know, this sort of patriarchal guilt, you know, over those privileges that I have that I have done nothing to deserve and that come at the expense of the oppression of women.
Mm.
Like, so we have a deep societal wound that informs a lot of my work and my concerns and what it is that I feel is necessary for me to feel in some way at peace with the world that I live in, that I know at least that I have done the best that I feel I could to address that wound. That is a much more comfortable conversation.
You know, as you were saying that, I was thinking about listeners of the podcast will know how much I gush over my former supervisor, Dr. Aisha McKenzie Mavinga, who has done incredible work on racism in the psychotherapy industry. And she has invited me to kind of question my intersectionality with, you know, my race and my gender and my ability and kind of all of those different layers. And I was reflecting on it recently and I was thinking about, I associate with just about every majority, you know, privileged demographic there is, except I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. And being a woman allows me the empathy to understand on some scale what other marginalized people will be going through, the rage, the fear, the, you know, that comes from being marginalized. And I was thinking about it and I was like, I'm so grateful for that understanding because it helps me work better with other people. And I was thinking about how cis, straight, able-bodied white men don't have that same sort of built-in understanding and how scary it has to be to start to peel those layers back with no concept of where you're going, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Not only that, but the very first piece of writing that I ever published was about the scary rabbit holes straight, able-bodied white men fall down. And with good intentions, fall down these holes that lead them to some scary places. And so this paper was about the X-Men and how you find a large literature about these superheroes who are intended to be a metaphor for any and all oppressed peoples. And that's the beauty of this concept, and it is also the danger of it, because what ends up happening is that these young men who don't have that experience of social oppression begin to feel like, well, I can experience it secondhand through these characters. And what they hear is, and this has been pushed by many, many writers and, you know, the publisher of these stories, is, well, but, you know, it's also nerds. Nerds are here. If you're a white dude who feels like you're oppressed for liking comic books, that's the same thing. You get it. And so this paper that I wrote was, whoa, wait, no, we don't. That is an incredibly irresponsible analogy to be pushing, because I can identify as a comic book nerd. I can grow up, you know, feeling, because I, you know, I was picked on for being dorky, but that is in no way comparable to racial oppression, gender oppression, and to suggest that it is, because we are so desperate, again, understandable, desperate to find common ground and build empathy, but we're doing it at the expense of actually understanding what social oppression is and how it functions and how we benefit from it and are somehow convincing ourselves that, hey, wait, maybe we don't.
And I think this is why what you're doing is so important, because it feels like you're providing a safe, reliable intro to a different way of exploring this.
I certainly hope so. And, you know, I have received messages from several men saying, wow, your videos, and often they'll list a few men. Your videos really opened my eyes up to something that I didn't realize I was doing, to a discourse that I didn't recognize was toxic. And obviously those are my favorite messages to receive, because that's the goal, right? That it's also great to hear from women who say, you know, I'm glad to see that there is a man out here doing this, saying these things. But, you know, at that point, I'm preaching to the choir.
Sure.
You don't need me to say that. But to know that there are men who needed to hear that and who then have been pushed in some way to take action, to make changes, that means the world.
And I'm glad to hear that, too, because part of me was like, God, I hope all his followers aren't just women.
You know, I don't think it's a surprise to say the majority are, but I also get, and this is great, and also sort of a demographic, a population that I didn't set out to speak to, but I'm glad that I hear now frequently, are parents with children between like 8 and 12, let's say, sort of that tween demographic. I have heard from dozens of parents who say that they will pick out some of my videos and watch them with their kids.
I love that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. That's, again, like I never thought I could be speaking to like a 10-year-old.
And here you are.
Yeah, to know that like moms and dads are, we know that they're going to see these videos and we want them to hear the response.
Yeah.
Like sort of like an inoculation.
Yeah, I love that. Let's tell people where they can find you to find these videos and show their kids, show their friends, show their dude.
So you can find some variation of my handle, Professor Neil, N-E-I-L, on all of TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Though TikTok and Instagram have everything that I make is posted mm-hmm. to those two platforms. The others have some time restrictions that sure. are trickier to work around. But you can find my videos there. I have my contact info there as well. I try to respond to all of the messages I receive. Some weeks that is a little more achievable than others.
Fair enough. Well, Neil, I really appreciate it. I've enjoyed this conversation a lot.
Yeah, me too.
I appreciate you coming on. And yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll have you back someday to talk more about all those rabbit holes and all the other, what you've learned in between.
You know, I'm sure that there will be a lot to talk about.
Absolutely.
Thanks to our guest for an amazing conversation today. To find out more about today's guest, you can visit www.headheartbiztherapy.com/podcast.
You can find Sarah at Head Heart Biz Therapy on Facebook and Instagram.
And you can find Anne at Spare Room Wellness or spareroomwellness.com.
Thanks as always to Andrea Klunder and the Creative Imposter Studios for editing, to Liam O'Donnell for the album art, and to Ben Mueller for our theme music. Until next time, bye-bye.